How's it going? Hope you're having a great day, and thank you for checking in. You know Shamar Moore from SWAT? Great-looking actor. He's also a director and a producer. Got his start in Young and the Restless. Gosh, I'd love to have him on the podcast. Yeah, maybe someday. But Bill Herenda, NBA contributor and college basketball analyst, was on an episode of SWAT. Had a chance to work with Shamar and making his network TV debut. Juggling dual careers, actor, TV broadcaster. What will he choose? And what was it like working with Shamar? We check in with Bill Herenda.
Shoot it down.
You know, I had this arranged to talk to you after the NBA trade deadline to get all the winners and losers and who did what. But more importantly, you made your network TV debut on SWAT. How did that go down?
You know what, Dave? It was just a serendipitous opportunity, which obviously was terrific. And I just can't say enough about the cast and crew. It was really a terrific experience.
Well, the main story was Kaido gathering enough plutonium to blow up U.S. military bases in Okinawa. But for me, the most compelling was the whole badge versus badge, right? This kind of a decathlon-type sporting event, and Bill Herenda was the announcer.
It brought me right back to my roots, having uncles that were policemen and firemen. I remember, Dave, going to the Hoboken High School when the Hoboken Fire Department played the Hoboken Police Department in hoops. So it brought me right back there. And, of course, a terrific edifice, Hoboken High School, another great venue, Venice Beach. So it really was a lot of fun. And, of course, the NFL guys that were on the episode were tremendous. And it really, James Harrison, Willie McGinnis, and Eric Dickerson, and it really reminded me of working on the Sacramento Kings pre- and post-game show with Bobby Jackson a couple of years ago, because the same habits and qualities that make these people successful in athletics make them successful in front of the camera and successful actors. And just the whole, as you know, being an experienced, of course, professional broadcaster and actor, it's just that team atmosphere, right? The culture. There are just so many parallels. And this was really just a terrifically fun project to be a part of.
I thought those three guys were really good, in particular James Harrison at the end. I thought he was fantastic, very human, talking about his mom with breast cancer and having the great interaction with the regular cast members of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, their attention to detail, the punctilious nature of, you know, getting your lines and the right delivery and all those things. I was really impressed. And at one point on set, Willie and I had that discussion that it's similar to, you know, drills at practice, right? That you're going through. And I think the other vibe there is just a great culture. I mean, I was on set a heartbeat, and Shamar Moore with the bro hug and Kenny Johnson, they could not have been more welcoming, accommodating. And I think there was just a vibe there with the cast, again, the entire cast and crew, the writers, that everyone's goal is just to have this be the best finished product that we can possibly deliver, with the end game being the audience's best interests at heart. And I think you see that not only when the show is being shot, but also just through the social media engagement before and after the episode airs. So it's just been a really terrific experience. I have so much respect for everyone involved.
What was it like for you being on set? My wife had to ask, you know, hey, ask about Shamar. You know, what was that like? And obviously, she goes back to watching his Young and the Restless days. So what about working with him in a scene?
I just, you know, the consummate professional. You know, really, Shamar is also a producer. And I think he just has so much class and credibility. There's a genuineness about him and an infectious enthusiasm. It's like that Mark Twain quote, you know, stay away from small people. They belittle your ambitions, but the truly great make you feel like you're great too. And I paraphrase Mark Twain, but that's the kind of person Shamar is. And I think he just engenders so much respect by colleagues and fans, of course. Just a super guy, and it was absolutely a great opportunity to work with him. It was just great.
Don't you think that Mark Twain quote is a great application for life, to hang around people like that, because you're going to kind of soak in that positivity and really take yourself to a new level?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the bar that we all strive for, Dave, you know, to be that positive influence. And, you know, also the other analogy I always make, a basketball one, is that life is about creating, sustaining and surviving runs. And sometimes it's difficult during, you know, low points to do that. But I couldn't agree more that a lot of it starts just with your thoughts and beliefs. And if you can surround yourself with terrific people, you know, there are just limitless opportunities. And I think that's, again, just kind of the bar that we all strive for, just to be as good as we can be, to be as positive as we can be, and definitely to have those types of teammates, mentors, and coaches. And, you know, that's the other thing about being on any set, right? It's just the PAs who were the first to arrive, the last to leave, the director, Maya Varvillo. She was absolutely tremendous, a great coach to me on this particular episode, and to everyone involved. So that's what it takes, right? It takes great ownership, great management, great GM, coaches, scouting, players, skill development, training, the business side of it, right? If we go back to the NBA, for example, it really does take a lot. And I think it's also really important to recognize your role in it, however small that may be, and just to perform as best as you can to contribute and to participate. And every opportunity is truly a blessing.
What was it like for you to watch it on television? Was it as good as you thought it was, or better?
Well, listen, I you know, they are so good at what they do, right? The production folks, and I always feel a little self-conscious watching myself. Like, I rarely watch games and stuff like that. So I just feel a little bit self-conscious. But I thought they did a terrific job. I thought the finished product was terrific. And, of course, you know, the ability of all of these actors to deliver their lines, whether it's, you know, kind of like we had fun scenes and then the dramatic scenes, you just leave with great respect for their craft. For the craft and how they're able to perform.
Well, for the average member of the audience, you know, apprehending Kaito was huge. But for me, the dramatic moment, who was going to win that arm wrestling competition? And you took it to a new level with your enthusiasm.
I've just been told that this year's Badge versus Badge tournament has set a new record in dollars raised for breast cancer prevention partners. And it all comes down to this: the heroes in red and the heroes in blue. All tied up at 2-2. The winner of this event takes home the 2019 Badge versus Badge trophy.
No, thanks, Dave. I'll tell you, you know, it's very easy to get amped up, right? And, you know, that particular scene in, you know, kind of a CrossFit gym where you live, right? That's your second home. You know, the crowd involvement, there was just a great vibe, great energy around it. So it was very easy for me to just kind of embrace that atmosphere and try to do justice to the writing and what they were looking for in that scene. And of course, the scene in Venice Beach. So it was just really, really a lot of fun. And again, everyone just kind of brought, you know, really good energy, really good positive energy, a great environment to have some fun and get it done.
Was there any room for ad-libbing, or was it all word for word?
No, I think there's always, you know, some room for that. And I think the writers kind of understand that. And as long as you're delivering, you know, the right tone, intonation, and you're on the right track, I think that's fine. I think, you know, I always strive to be verbatim, to be as close as as possible. And you know how it goes. I mean, certain things, factual things, you know, you have to be. But I think that there's always that, you know, that little bit of wiggle room to just be authentic and bring that to the scene. I think a lot of times that will prevail, and folks will embrace that if you deviate a little bit. But I obviously within reason, Dave. There was some vocabulary I don't think I mentioned alacrity or poison equanimity or what have you. So within reason, right?
Yeah, KYP, know your personnel, and percolating. I didn't hear those last night.
That's right. Yeah, Luca is percolating. The scintillating victory.
That. Oh, God, that would have put me over the top if you could have pulled those off.
To the adulation of the LAPD. And the consternation and frustration of the L.A. Fire Department.
Oh, if you get another shot, would you pull out the old Herenda vocabulary and do that?
Perhaps, Dave, perhaps.
How long did it take to do, I mean, for example, that first basketball scene at Venice Beach, just over 2 minutes of TV time. What about the length of time that you were there and how much are you working? I know there's a lot of hurry up and wait when it gets to, you know, TV and movies.
Yeah. And, you know, Oprah Winfrey, right, has that great series with her Masters series. And LL Cool J made that point where, you know, music is kind of more artist dependent. And you can kind of see that and understand that, right? You've got to really be, in that zone, right, to produce good music. And that can kind of come and go. Whereas TV, and of course music, there are a lot of players involved and elements. But TV and movies, definitely, you got to be there. And there are so many moving parts, Dave, as you know, from lighting and camera work and audio and what have you. So the scenario there is, yeah, the whole thing was like definitely a full day. And you're right. You have to, I believe, you hear actors talk about this all the time. You know, you have to stay ready, but there is a lot of waiting around involved, and it's a lot of patience, but it's certainly a labor of love, right? I mean, it's just one of those deals where recognizing how important each element is in it, I think that makes it easy to be patient and to understand that, you know, it's all got to come together. And you know how it goes. Sometimes you just work and take your time and get it right. And it's just one of those deals where it's somewhat unpredictable as to how much time it's going to take or how long it'll be to get it done. But everyone ultimately doesn't matter. You just want to get it right.
It was a full day for both scenes or a full day for each one?
Oh, overall full day.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. And you were, I mean, it was a small role, but you embraced it and you brought energy and sizzle, and you could see your inner conflict and turmoil and bringing in your child experience. I could see it all kind of unfold in the character.
Oh yeah. No, thanks, Dave. And I think, you know, it's like anything else, you know, you draw upon your experience and you know, in a way it's just kind of funny, right? I mean, who hasn't, you know, played hoop and kind of, you know, engaged in a little bit of trash talk and so on and so forth. So we had some really good dialogue, right, between, you know, the regular cast members and the game as it was evolving and as, you know, Willie McGinnis was draining the free throws. So, you know, it was just oodles of fun and a really enjoyable role to play. No doubt about that.
You've been dabbling down there for a little while, and we first did a podcast a year or so ago, and you were a golf hand model, and you've done some kind of, you know, some smaller things. Now, do you have the acting bug now?
Sure, absolutely. You know, no question about it. I'm in Dave, ASAP Rocky's new video. The kids turned out fine. That video just came out. I'm in there for a split second. But that was another really fun project to be a part of. And I've got some other stuff that will come out, and definitely am actively auditioning frequently. My agent is doing a great job. So I really do. And again, I think that there are just so many parallels between the acting and entertainment industry and athletics, and having been a player and doing some coaching, and then of course broadcasting. That I definitely have the bug, and being in Los Angeles, of course, I mean, is just paramount. It's great to be here and to have the opportunity to audition for a number of opportunities, and to land some, and to learn along the way. It's been a terrific learning experience, because just, I think, like anything else, you learn the routine and what the expectations are, and how to be patient, how to perform when you're called upon to, how to be patient when you have to wait. And I love the interdependence. As you're striving to be at your best, you don't want to let down the writers, the directors, the producers, the casting people who have put you and given you this opportunity, and your fellow castmates. You know, you want to raise the level of your game. And like you said, regardless of the role or the duration or the number of lines, it's like, all right, from Kenny Johnson to Shamar Moore, I am going to bring it. And hopefully try to, match the professionalism and be able to hang with these folks. So it's just great. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to one other thing that's going to come out pretty soon. And then looking down the road, I'm sure they'll, knock wood, there'll be others. And I'm just enjoying the process, just trying to listen to the universe here and go in the right direction, whatever that may be.
Are you, or will you, take acting classes?
You know what? It's funny, because I took my first one recently, so I'm definitely going to work on my craft. And I think that's another recognition too, that we can't do it on our own, and there are just ways that we can, chosen field of life and career. If you are a doctor, right, you must maintain your license and attend certain classes, right, to maintain, being board certified, right, as an orthopedic surgeon, or attorneys and lawyers, and I believe acting is the same way. So even though, I think it's just for me, I think that part of it is going to be beneficial, and to be able to learn from some great instructors down here, and of course Jenna Fisher has a great book out that I've pretty much devoured. So it's like anything else, right? You just want to learn and get better and improve your performance and your daily habits.
I saw a great post from Mahershala Ali, and I'm a massive fan of his, and he said, while you're chasing your dream and waiting for your big break, you're always working on your craft, whether you're getting paid for it or not. You're always polishing and always fine-tuning, and you and I have talked about this off the air, just anything you can do to keep in the game and to fine-tune and get a little bit better is something you got to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Dave. And I think that, that goes along with, like, if you're not nervous, that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, pressure is a privilege, right? I think that may have been Billie Jean King. And to, really understand that and kind of get after it, those are really important. And I think it's a balance, too, of recognizing that you are enough, too, right? And that's what Jenna Fisher talks about in her book, that sometimes, you don't have to be over the top. You are enough. And I think it's just kind of striking that balance, right? Of course, you can't mail it in, but you can also work on it. And you have to work on it to get better and to improve. And none of us can stay stagnant. That's, I always equated it to the street sign back in Jersey. No stopping, no standing. If you're doing either of those, you're not moving and you're not improving.
I had this great drill at an acting coach, a friend of mine, Matthew Berry. He's big down in Los Angeles, casting director. He said, just stand in front of a mirror and look at yourself, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. So at the beginning, you're going to see your hair messed up and, you know, the drool down your face. But then eventually, as you keep continuing to look, you see through your flaws and imperfections as you learn to love yourself. And when you go into an audition, all that stuff that you take with you, here I am, the good and the bad, and I'm bringing it to you, and I'm showing it to you, and I'm giving you everything I have. I think it's a great drill. It's a great way to learn to appreciate everything about yourself and everything you've been through, how it all shapes you.
Yeah, that's great, Dave. I love it. And I think that's what ultimately everyone's looking for, is just authenticity, right? And being yourself. And that's really vital, I think, to acting. And it's just so much fun. It really is on so many levels. But that's great advice. I like that a lot.
What if you had a choice to do, and I'll make up a conference, be the color man in the Atlantic Coast Conference, doing two games a week, conference tournament, and an NCAA thing, or I put you in a sitcom on CBS? Got to pick one.
Yeah, you know what, Dave? I would – listen, I am totally at the point now where I'm open to anything and everything, and – I'm just in the zone of like whatever the universe presents with, I would go with. So I honestly can't even pick. Yeah. And I'm really in that mindset of just going with the flow. And listen, I went to UMass Lowell, as you know, in the America East Conference. So I think that it's more likely that I'd be over at CBS than in the ACC, being that I didn't play there, just being realistic. But again, I'm just open right now. I'm an open book, and just going with the flow.
The way I tell people, regardless whether it's doing play-by-play, podcasting, acting, dancing, whatever, it's just I'll do all of them until the universe demands I only do one of them, where I have to throw myself in full-blown as an actor. I have to do play-by-play and nothing else, but do them all until the world says, or the universe says, you've got to commit one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, last night I worked Hawaii at Long Beach. It was a great game, great atmosphere. It was just terrific fun. And this is an expression, Dave, right, that hasn't come up yet, but just trying to be in the moment. And, man, I just love that game. And, you know, the Hawaii's offense, the great spacing. And Long Beach is battling through some injuries and illness, and their grit and determination. They fell last night to the Bows. But you're right. I think there's something really to be said for that. So whatever opportunity you have at that moment, just try to be present, do the best job you can, enjoy it, and roll with it, and then just see what's next. You know, that's all we can really ever do.
That be in the moment as an actor thing is critical, too, because you may have an idea of how you – want to read a certain script or how you want to portray a character. Then when you go in there, maybe some other things happen. Someone cuts you off on the freeway or your mom's ill. But you know what? That to make you a great actor is not to forget those things, but bring those to the table and not be so locked into how you're going to do that role. Bring who you are. And maybe it's a little bit different than you rehearsed it the day before or you practiced on the way over because your feelings change, the vibe changes, the room temperature changes. And bring all that stuff to the table, and you never know what kind of magic you might create.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's vital, just bringing those life experiences. And no, you're absolutely right. You know, what's the goal? You know, what's the objective here for the director and the writers? And you like I say, you just your castmates playing off each other could be very different than you anticipate. And I think that's really important, just to be open, to be nimble, to be flexible. And just be a good teammate. Be the type of teammate that you expect or would like to have. And I can certainly say that without a doubt, SWAT, those folks on the cast and crew, just over the top, terrific.
We come back to a lot of those team sports analogies, and you're known as a basketball announcer, NBA contributor. So we'll get into a few basketball things because I think the most interesting stuff we've already talked about, but obligated to talk a little bit of sports since I'm a sports announcer and you're a sports guy too. Most of the interesting deals at the deadline came in the Eastern Conference. Do you feel one team separated itself, whether it be Toronto getting Gasol, Milwaukee with the Mirotic, Philadelphia with the Tobias Harris deal?
I don't think so, Dave. You know, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, right? Maybe the Warriors won the trade deadline by doing nothing. And I think that it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of attention, of course, focused on it. And now we'll shift to the buyout market. But you're right. I think I'd be hard-pressed to say, did any of those teams separate themselves? And, you know, like with Philadelphia, for example, now perhaps they have – you know, a solid core in the four, adding Harris into the mix. And now they added a former Big West guy, James Ennis, where they need to bolster their bench, right? I mean, from that standpoint, they lost Bellinelli and Ilyasova over the summer when they were banking on Fultz and free agency. So from that standpoint, you know, maybe Philly has improved. You know, you got to love Mirotić with Milwaukee and his ability to space the floor around Giannis. He'll thrive there, I have no doubt, with Budenholzer. And then Toronto, yeah, you know, I think that was a good move for them as well. But, you know, without the benefit of training camp too, I think sometimes we have to, you know, kind of pump the brakes a little bit on some of these deals. And then I think the other overarching deal here too is teams that like the Clippers or the Knicks, and the Lakers, right, that are in position to try to attract, you know, some top-tier free agents, as we could have a very robust free agent market, as you know.
The Lakers are considered a team that was a loser at the deadline because they went all in on Anthony Davis and got nothing in return. What if you're on that roster? You're one of those kids that was being rumored in a deal, like Alonzo Ball, like Brandon Ingram or Kyle Kuzma. How tough is it to play when you know that they talked about getting rid of you?
Yeah, well, this is where you've got to be a professional, Dave. And from a coaching staff perspective, you've got to be able to galvanize these guys now. And also, you know, I think the players, the veterans recognize it. And I think the younger guys are learning it. And they'll have to recognize that, hey, we've got arguably the best player in the world at LeBron. And now we have the opportunity to get into the playoffs. And, you know, you got to take advantage of that. You got to learn as much as you can from playing with players like LeBron and Rondo and JaVale McGee. And you just got to turn the page and accept it and move on. And, you know, Dave, we've gone this far without talking about Hubie Brown, but Hubie Brown was on with Chris Sheridan on a podcast that I highly, highly recommend, like yours, that, you know, he talks about the playoffs and it's like, you know, whoever wins in the playoffs usually comes down to players 4 through 8. And if you're in that group, you know, for the Lakers, that's going to be a critical group to try to propel them into the playoffs. And, you know, he talks more about the dynamics, too, of, you know, the starters are going to play 32 to 33 minutes in the regular season, but in the playoffs, it'll be 40, 41 minutes. And for the backups, you know, 16 minutes in the regular season, they'll go down to 7 to 10 in the playoffs. And how it changes the matchups and what have you. So I think that's where you're looking. You know, I commend the Lakers for not pulling the trigger on a deal that they didn't want to totally leverage their future. And I also commend the Clippers on recognizing that taking a longer-term approach here may be better for them as opposed to taking desperate acts. And I tweeted this out. Around the trade deadline, some of the best moves are the ones you never make. But then it's Bill Withers with Grover Washington Jr., that song, Just the Two of Us. Good things come to those who wait, not to those who wait too late. So from that standpoint, you have to kind of decide which camp are you in. Are you a buyer, are you a seller, are you neutral?
Where does Davis ultimately end up, in your opinion? Since Boston, I guess, rumored to be willing to throw in Jason Tatum after the season's over, and we don't know what's going to happen with Kyrie Irving.
So, you know, Dave, it's interesting because even though he said, you know, he doesn't want to go to Boston or what have you, didn't like the way they treated Isaiah Thomas, that's probably likely just from the standpoint that they have so many assets. Like if you throw Tatum and what Ainge has, it could be as many as 4 first-round draft picks this year, that could be likely. Now, of course, they would be rolling the dice that they can entice him to sign long-term and ultimately stay. So that's the risk that Ainge would be taking on. And the same thing if Irving would be involved in that type of deal, Irving could be like, all right, I'll go, but I'm not going to sign with you long term. So there's risk on both parties. But I think if you look around, you have to have the inclination that Boston, arguably, again, you can argue this point, has the most assets and could effectively land him after the season.
I think if New Orleans could pick, they'd say, hey, we'll shut you down because you're an asset that we need to get a lot in return. Ultimately, he's going to play the season. The rest of the way, Dell Demps issuing a statement saying things about league integrity, et cetera. I think the league told him, hey, you can't sit this guy. How do you think that went down, and how awkward is that for Davis to go back and play when he's going to be ultimately somewhere else?
Yeah, that is a different deal, right? Because we saw that with Kyrie, Dave, right, over the summer, and the trade was done. We had Jimmy Butler in Minnesota, right, in a similar scenario, right? He played, he played for Minnesota, but then ultimately was dealt. So what you have here, like you're saying, which is kind of awkward, is that you've got a guy who has said he wants out and he's got to play the season out with not, you know, a trade looming now that the deadline is passed. And again, I think it just boils down to integrity, professionalism. I would expect Davis to play and to play hard. And I think Alvin Gentry, who's obviously a pro, will be able to manage that scenario. But, you know, listen, this is the world that we live in. I mean, to me, in the modern era, it's always been a players' league, and these guys are closer than they've ever been. I think just as, you know, the AAU impact and just the fact that the basketball world is always been small, and I think in this era it's just become smaller, that there, you know, there's a lot of esprit de corps amongst competitors because they've played together or played against each other in the AAU deal or in college. So I think, you know, every generation and every era, the game evolves and changes, and, you know, it's never been more popular. Of course, you know, this is obviously global, and it's, you know, the game is great, and it's just different, and that's how we've got to just got to roll with it.
Yeah, well, all this talk about who's going where, it actually stole some of the thunder from the Super Bowl and Major League Baseball with the Hot Stove League. It's something now that really keeps the league relevant, whether you're playing games or not.
It is, Dave. I mean, the only dead month is really August with the NBA, because you're right. You just roll through the summer with Summer League and free agency and, you know, of course, the draft preceding that. So it just never stops, and it's great. It's just tremendous. However, I guess, you know, you have to add the caveat of, you know, look at Kevin Durant this week, and he's just had enough of, you know, talk about his free agency. And so it's not without contentious times, of course, for players and the media and some friction and tension. But it is virtually, you know, just with that exception of August, it really, the world keeps spinning, the clock keeps ticking.
What do you make of that rant this week by him when he was just asked a couple of questions about why are you not talking, and then that proceeded, you know, to have him melt down?
We've noticed that you hadn't talked for a while. Is it anything to do with anything on your mind, or has it just been coincidence that you haven't talked for some time?
Why do you care?
Because you'd usually talk.
Well, I didn't feel like talking the last couple of days.
It was anything in particular?
No, I just didn't feel like
it. Anything to do with conversation about free agency?
Yeah, that's the conversation you're going to have. I don't think about that type of stuff. That's your job.
You've obviously been around the noise for so long. Is it bothering you more this year? Is it louder this year?
It's unnecessary. You got to do Ethan Strauss, who come in here and just give his whole opinion on stuff and make it seem like it's coming from me. And he just walk around here, don't talk to nobody, just walk in here and survey and then write something like that. And now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk to y'all about that. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Grow up. Yeah, you, grow up. Come on, bro. I come in here and go to work every day. I don't cause no problems. I play the right way. Well, I try to play the right way. I try to be the best player I can be every possession. What's the problem? What am I doing to y'all?
You are talking to the media.
So? Who are you? Why do I got to talk to you? Tell me. Is that going to help me do my job better? Nah, bro. I didn't feel like talking.
Kevin, the free agency thing really hadn't been that much of a discussion coming to you, because we got it loud and clear, at least most of us should have, that it was off limits.
What's the problem now?
No, just that you've been quiet and you're not usually quiet. You usually share your opinions and stuff. So everybody's like trying to figure out what's going on. And we're all getting questions from fans like, what's wrong with Kevin? I just tell him he's playing okay, but he's not talking right now.
I just don't trust none of y'all. Every time I say something, it's get twisted up and thrown out in so many different publications. Try to tear me down with my words that I say. So when I don't say nothing, it's a problem. I just want to play ball. I want to go to the gym and go home. That's all.
Well, you know what, Dave? Having a brother that's in the coaching profession, coaching at FDU back in the Northeast Conference, and many friends, you know, that coach in college ranks and in the NBA, I have a more sympathetic tone for the players and coaches having to answer questions, some of which, and I mean, it is rare, but I think that if the quality of the question is simply to bait click, you know what I'm saying? Like the questions are designed to elicit some type of salacious answer, or the question is not informed as to the game strategy or what have you. I very much sympathize with the players and the coaches that have to answer these questions. And I mean, and here I'm with Durant. If he wants to shut it down, I get that it's part of his responsibility to deal with the media. But I feel as though I could totally understand where he's coming from. And I mean, I think and we can all play the Monday morning quarterback here. And he could have said on media day, right? Hey, I'm not going to answer any free agency questions. So he could have shut it down at that point. Don't ask me during the season. And, perhaps he himself will learn from that. But I'm more sympathetic to Durant in this case.
Well, the one statement I think he was totally off base was, hey, why do I need to talk to you? Who are you? The bottom line is he has to talk to him. Now, maybe he doesn't have to give the answers he wants, but he is obligated. That's a part of the job. That's a part of the CBA. That's part of the deal of being an NBA player. You have to deal with the media, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. No, that's totally true. That's totally true. And I think there, you just saw that, authentic type of response. And it is true. And I think also, listen, this is just an aberration. He probably regrets that tone and understands, Dave, you're right, that he's got to deal with the media, and it is part of the job. And in that moment, he just kind of, blew it off. So, no, you're totally right there. There's no argument with that.
Hey, most importantly, are you a member of the union yet, SAG?
No, I'm not. You know what, Dave? Look, I would liken this to Paulie from Goodfellas. He said, and I'm in the same camp, I can sit down and have a nice plate of spaghetti and meatballs. I don't know how to run a restaurant. You know what I mean? So, like, that stuff I just kind of leave to my agent, and I'm just kind of focused on the spaghetti and meatballs and not how it's made and, you know what I mean, and how the restaurant runs and, all that stuff. So I'm just kind of taking it one step at a time.
Now, I just thought you were phenomenal. I was so proud watching it. In fact, I told you off the recording, you were at the very beginning of the episode, and so I watched the whole show with the intent of saying, they've got to bring him back on. And sure enough, they bookend the episode, horrendous at the beginning with the basketball, closing with the arm wrestling, wrapping a little bow on it, completing an amazing episode, and some guy named Shamar just happened to be in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Dave. Yeah. No, it was just, I just feel really fortunate to have been a part of it and to work with everybody. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thanks for all of your support. I really appreciate it. And I'm just glad it worked out the way it did and turned out the way it did. They obviously do a terrific job producing all those episodes. So it was just a lot of fun.
When you get the star on the Walk of Fame, can I be invited to the ceremony?
Of course. Of course. Dave, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
So much fun. Hey, kiss your girls from me, and I'm super proud of you, man. Please keep in touch.
Absolutely, Dave. Thank you so much. Best to your family, and as always, thanks for having me on. Can they stay there?
Can they stay there? What an exciting game here at Venice Beach for the 47th Badge versus Badge tournament between LAPD and the fire department. Let's go, Gina! Come on, Fox, and now! And Cook with the layup. Oh, LA Fire is up by three!
Super cool. You can follow Bill Herenda on Twitter at Bill Herenda, all one word, obviously, B-I-L-L-H-E-R-E-N-D-A. The executive producer of the podcast is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. We certainly appreciate your positive feedback and comments. Helps out a lot. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.